Right.
So the other side of this is you've got things like MySpace and YouTube, you know, and the little labels that are coming out and featuring good musicians, really fine musicians, and the people who are even just putting their own music on the internet.
Yes.
You know, people can access it that way.
Yeah.
So it's a big kind of evolution. There's a big wave going on. And things will settle down, it's for sure. But in the meantime, it's quite chaotic and difficult for an instrumentalist just to get a recording contract today.
Yeah, but you know, it's like you said, I think it's so, it's almost a blessing in disguise that the internet has become so advanced that, you know, people can transfer tracks back and forth overseas. You know, they're recording an album literally in their own house instead of the big, you know, studio time and the, you know, the hundreds of dollars and et cetera, et cetera. But I think you hit it on the head. I mean, it's better to, like you said, you know, you got to be in the information age now, and you know, the MySpace, all that. That's where it's at now.
I know, but the, I mean, the, well, the downside of this, of course, is the many, many studios. You know, when they went down, they went bankrupt, and this is also regrettable. But it's like a, you know, castle of cards. You take one card out, and things start to fall down.
Yeah.
You know, the record companies, the studios, but of course. The as you say, I mean, it's because at the moment it's mainly music, but probably within 5 years people will get everything off the net, whether it's movies, CDs, or anyway, CDs are coming off the net. There's a generation out there have never even bought a CD.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I don't think they even want to.
That's, you know, so true.
Because they get the music from down the net. Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm buying off iTunes.
Yeah.
It's great. It's
I'm still
wonderful.
Old. I'm old school. I still got to get this.
It's. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Z88.9, Newman and Mixon, Mount Laurel, Marlton, and Mount Holly.
Hi, this is John McLaughlin, and you're listening to the Gaglio Archives.
Thank you.
You know, John, you've had this way of quote unquote destroying everything where you know, especially for this album, you said, you know, I got this feeling that you don't want to be pigeonholed into one thing. And I'm assuming that this way of thinking has made you use, you know, the different colors on your musical palette.
You know, I don't know what to say because I just follow my nose, Tom, mm-hmm. wherever. I mean, I'm very extremely fortunate because I've been allowed to basically record my entire life, my entire recording career, what music I hear and music that like a painter, he paints what he wants to paint.
Yeah.
And people buy his paintings. But of course I know there are painters and people don't buy their paintings. I know musicians, people don't buy their records.
Yeah.
And I'm extremely fortunate in that. And I don't know why I have to like this the thieves and poets with the, I mean basically came as a request from a friend of mine here in Monaco who's the choreographer of the Ballet of Monte Carlo, who's a very dear friend. He's a wonderful choreographer, and I know the dances very well. I really like ballet. We go a lot to the ballet, especially it's very like modern, and some of the new choreographers.
Yeah.
They got this influence from the street. They got the influence from the break dancing. You know, I mean, this is all, it's all fusion, Tom, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
In any event, we were just hanging out one day. He said, why don't you do some music for me, and I'll choreograph it. And he said, what a wonderful idea.
There you go.
So, but in the end, it was all programmed, and we were ready to go, and I got a call from the administrative director of the ballet, of the orchestra, actually, because it was going to be a live performance.
Yeah.
So he said, so give me a list of the orchestra, you know, the complement. And I said, well, I know the theater we're playing, you know, it's a little small, so I'll take four basses instead of eight. I'll take four celli instead of eight. I'll take four viola instead of, you know, and so on, so on, so on. And I get to the end. He said, well, okay, I'm going to give you one bass. I'm going to give you one cello. So he goes, and I said, wait a minute, stop. I said, I just worked for almost 2 years on this piece. And he gave me one bass. He said, it's like that. I said, no, you know, it's not like that. I have an alternative.
Right.
He said, no, you don't. I said, yes, I cancel.
Yeah.
So, in the end, we didn't even perform it, you know.
Right.
I mean, John Cristal, the choreographer, he knows. He's dealing with these people all the time, you know. And we laughed about it, but and so we ended up not doing it. But in the end, I recorded it with another orchestra because you know I like the piece. I really love it, and I got to work with some of these great classical soloists. Like Victoria Mulova, the violinist. Matt Heimovitz, wonderful cellist out of Boston.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I do it. I've done these experiments my whole life, whether it's with the Indian musicians or with Paco de Lucia, with the flamenco music,
yeah,
or with the orchestral works. But I'm a fusion player. I mean, I love electric fusion.
But you do like to wear different hats.
I know, yeah. I know. Yeah. Maybe one day I'll be able to make a record where it'll all come together, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know when. I hear recordings like a painting. You know, it's like it starts and it ends, and I hear what's going on inside. Anyway, there's a limit to what you can put on a CD.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, yeah. I mean, you have about 65, 70 minutes.
Maybe a little
bit
more, yeah.
A little over 70 minutes.
Yeah, total. A little over 70, right.
Which actually is a lot of music.
Sure.
When you think of the old vinyl days.
Oh, God, know, yeah.
At maximum 18 minutes a side.
You know,
oh, those were the good old days.
Yeah, they, and let me tell you, vinyl still sounds good. I will always fight that, vinyl still sounds good on the radio.
Well, it was great for us because now we have to do twice as much music for the same money.
God, it's
but
so
anyway,
true.
But I don't know. I don't know. I love the flamenco culture. I mean, the thing is, I was exposed to these cultural forms of music when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
By the time I was 15, you know, I was very much influenced by the Mississippi blues, you know, and by Django Reinhardt, French jazz guitar player, by flamenco music. Jazz was the ultimate. I mean, by the time I had Miles when I was 15, Coltrane, that whole...
That was it, yeah.
...wonderful gang, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I let everything drop. But it's funny because at the time when I heard... You remember Miles Ahead?
Yeah.
I think this came out... This must have come out in about 59. You know, and this collaboration Miles had with Gil Evans. And Gil and Miles were both really deep under the influence of flamenco at this period.
Yeah.
And this record, Miles Ahead, it's just wonderful. Like Sketches of Spain.
Oh, yeah.
But Miles Ahead is a
beautiful,
wonderful record. And you hear these kind of... And I had the flamenco influence, and I'd been growing up with flamenco and jazz, and I heard Miles, who totally blew my mind.
Yeah.
And here he was playing the most soulful kind of jazz music, but with this flamenco, and it was clear that he was in love with flamenco music. I mean, I felt so happy because I could hear. And there's fusion music again.
That's doing it.
Tom, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, how are you going to get away from it?
How'd you get turned on to it, John? Who played flamenco for you for the first time, that style of music?
I heard a guitar player called Pepe Martinez.
Okay.
In fact, because I was a pianist, I started as a pianist, but a guitar arrived when I was 11. And in a very short space of time, I heard Muddy Waters, Bigwood Brunsey, Lead Belly, Brownie McGee, Sonny Terry, the real Mississippi blues players, you know, and
yeah.
then flamenco music. This is mainly due to the influence of my elder brothers,
yeah.
who were in university, and there was the beginning of the blues movement. This is 1952. We're
yeah.
going back a long way here.
Yeah.
1952, I was 10 years old. By 54, I was hearing blues music, flamenco music, and when I hear flamenco music, I want to... Because I abandoned the guitar, the piano right away in favor of the guitar.
Wow.
And I wanted to be a flamenco guitar player.
Yeah.
I wanted to play flamenco music. I loved it so much. But I was living in this little village. I mean, they didn't even know what flamenco was. You know,
right.
in a little village south of Scotland. I mean, come
on. You're in your own...
About
yeah,
it. But I had the jazz records, and I used to listen to Willis Conover, the American Forces Network, the AFN,
yeah.
and every week, this was Willis Conover playing Jazz Hour.
Right,
you know, I mean,
right.
and I'll be glued to the radio, listen to this, you know, be hearing Miles, or, you know, all the new hits of the 50s. But it was just luck that I got exposed to all this music. But, I mean, I used to skip school once a month and hitchhike down to Manchester.
Yeah.
Where I'd stay with my brother, because there was a flamenco club, and I could see and hear the real flamenco guitar players. It was like a Spanish group of people, local Spaniards, you know,
mm-hmm.
who were in Manchester, which is a big city, and they'd get together, and they'd invite a flamenco guitar player once a month, and I used to go down there and watch it
yeah.
and listen to it, and this was a marvelous side of my education. And, you know, I mean, it was inevitable. When I ran into Paco, I mean, this guy, what a wonderful guitar player.
Oh, God, yeah.
What a wonderful musician.
Yeah.
I mean, really radical. And he's been really criticized, Tom, by the way.
Now, why so?
Really criticized by the purists. The purists, they're like the bane of the music industry, the music world.
Because he stepped into the unknown a little bit? Is that?
Yeah, yeah. Because he's pushing the barriers back.
Yeah.
No, but listen, I mean, there's a very famous story. I was in the Baron Club, I think it was 1969, Miles was playing. I wasn't in his band. I was playing with Tony. I was doing recordings with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember he walked off the stage, and a brother came up to him and said, Miles, why don't you play like you used to play? Miles looked at him and said, how did I used to play? You know?
That's beautiful.
What can you say?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
people, they got these fixed ideas, like, you should sound like this, or you should play like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If you don't, you know,
yeah, we want to hear
you're
them,
doing it all wrong.
Right. We want to hear Birds of Fire again. We want to hear, you know, I mean,
I know. And
I understand that. And and it's just like the radio show. It's the same thing. It's like, you know, the progressive rock audience, they want to hear the Genesis and the Yes and the bands that sound
like
that. But it's like, you know, hey, look, that was great in 1977. That was great in 1974. But,
yeah,
you know, there are young people and there are new bands and bands that, you know, the guys are, you know, in their mid-40s and 50s have been doing the same thing for 30 years. And you know, it's just as progressive and as different as,
yeah,
you know, as it was back when the age started, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, it's really, it's flagrant in the classical world because there's a big crisis being going on in the classical music world because over the at least 10, 15 years, because the people, you know, they don't want to hear Olivia Messiaen or Bela Bartok or Stravinsky, for that matter,
right,
let alone the really young contemporary composers.
Yeah.
They want to hear Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, you know, Schubert, Brahms, and they're just like, you know, whether it's 18th, 19th century. And it's, but the musicians, they're getting fed up with it. The orchestra's getting fed up with it. The audiences are dwindling. You know, it's, but at least there are a lot of, I don't know about the United States, but in Europe there's at least tremendous support for the young composers, and of course there are a lot of jazz festivals in Europe that are full of American jazz musicians every summer. You know?
Yeah.